Welcome back to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
I'm Rob Singh.
And we are going to have an incredible conversation today. So tell me, what is your hot take?
So my hot take, which I think is perfect for this podcast, but I like contentious, is that we're going to have more AI friends than human friends in the next X years.
So tell me more about that, because it's so funny. I actually just had a conversation, the podcast recording before you. So this is, you're my second one of the day. The one right before you today said the exact opposite, because she said AI isn't all we're cracking it up to be, and it's not really ever going to replace human relationships. So we're literally going to have two episodes back to back having this conversation. So let's dive in more. Why do you think we're going to have more AI friends?
So I'm looking at macro trends and just sort of human behavior. And I like to do this exercise of when you look at some sort of behavior, just keep asking why. Like, why are they doing that? How does it make you feel? Like, why? And if you keep asking why, one of the interesting things is a lot of things distill back down to sort of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like, I'm doing this ultimately because it makes me more famous, right? Like, I use Instagram because people can see all the great food I eat and all the great places I visit. I'm doing this because it makes me money. I'm doing this because it helps me meet people, right? And a lot of the stuff we use is about entertainment. Like, I'm doing this because I'm bored, right? Anyways, okay, so full circle. What we're seeing, you know, let's look at self-driving cars or just on-demand cars. Why is Waymo with 2x the price outperforming Uber in many markets? People don't want to talk to people. Let's look at examples like social AI, right? When you, social AI was a startup that was acquired quickly by Meta Facebook, but the premise was very simple. You post something human authentic, but the replies were actually from AI bots. Very fascinating premise, but what is that playing on? If you kind of ask the question, it's playing on this desire for attention, this sort of need, like, right? AI is giving me attention. AI is responding to my post on Twitter, which I get no responses to, right? And so, right, you're playing on those needs. Like, look at other examples like AI music. You know, we're seeing like case by case, even examples of AI avatars on Zoom, right? Where it can better read the room and understand people's emotions. We had a data point that I found really interesting was they looked at SDR, so sales development reps doing inside sales, and humans in some of these surveys preferring to talk to the AI bot versus human. Why? Because with the AI bot, they can more authentically say, no, I'm not interested. They can ask questions that are far reaching, whether it's technical or pricing, the AI bot could answer. And it was always available. Right. Whereas normally a normal salesperson, you have to go back. Right. I'll get back to you, or give me a day or two. Let me check on that. Or I don't know about this. Or I feel like, you know, because you're a real person, I don't want to hurt your feelings. So I don't want to say no. Right. Look at character AI. You know, people are building full blown relationships with AI. Now, I don't know if it's AI girlfriends, you know, it's a reimagined deceased family members. Again, I'm not necessarily saying I'm endorsing this future. And that who am I to judge whether this is a good or bad version of the future? I sometimes wonder, just like my parents, I used to think we're like living in the past, saying, oh, why are you using on the phone all the time? And I'm like, am I living in the past? This is just the way things are going. I see my kids, you know, they don't think of friends the same way I think of friends, right? Their friends are online. So I'm seeing lots and lots of data points where people are preferring AI. And we are seeing real companionship being created. This is independent of whether this is healthy, by the way. I'm just kind of sort of calling this out. And so I could see a future where this becomes the standard.
One of the things that I am wrestling with in my own business, and in particular relevant to this, is, and I think it's really what you're speaking to, is that whether we like it or not, people get to define their own needs and what they need. So do I think that my friends need to be friends with an AI? Maybe not. Is it healthy? I don't know. But I don't get to sit here and say, like, you know what? You don't need that, because they define it however they define it, especially with that Maslow's hierarchy of needs that you mentioned. I love the idea and the thing that you brought up about the SDR in particular, because, okay, what do I need from an SDR? I need a quick decision on whether or not this is a fit for me. I need to understand if it can fit in my technical stack or my technical situation. I need to understand if it's going to solve my problem. And I need the ability to move on if it's not going to. And you're right. I probably will get more of those answers more quickly and more detailed without the pressure if I'm talking to an AI versus a person.
So much of the time we spend outside of, let's call it core work, is for entertainment, right? We call it listening to a podcast. Is this an educational thing? Maybe. But I think of that as the second use case. The first use case, it's entertainment, right? I'm listening to stuff because they entertain me. And these AI chatbots that people are building relationships with, whether you want to call them virtual therapists or, you know, thought partners or whatnot, they know you over time. They're learning about you, and you can confide and you can be totally honest. And so I feel that behavior doesn't surprise me. Again, coming back to sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Your boredom, isolation, the need to sort of share what I feel and get validation, right? We humans prefer validation. There's enough social data out there that indicates that we will gravitate to audience that validate what we think. And AI is much more likely to validate what we think or our assumptions and whatnot. So I'm sort of, my sort of opinion here is this is happening because this is just playing on human instinct. Now, at the same time, I also think about this quote. I think it was from Sergey. It may have been from Larry in a discussion he had with Elon Musk like 15 years ago, where Elon was concerned that AI or AGI or whatnot, this is like many, many years ago, would replace humans. And I think it was Larry or Sergey had a response that was something along the lines like, if they're superior to us in every way, then that's the, you know, like that's kind of the natural next step in evolution, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a very dystopian sort of perspective, but it's interesting, right? It's like, oh, they'll carry the history of the humankind, and now we've evolved into another sort of form. So obviously, again, I'm not necessarily advocating that either, but it's interesting to kind of think about these things.
I think it's important to think about them. Like if we're just standing here and saying, I don't like what I'm hearing, so therefore I'm going to turn off the podcast or stop thinking about this or kind of bury my head in the sand, I just feel like you're going to be left behind. Because a lot of what I'm seeing in technology and AI and everything that we are seeing, I feel like that curve is speeding up so fast. I was just talking to a startup founder who said that they could probably have their product shipped and ready to be used by customers in the next year or so. I'm like, man, that's too late. Like if you are not able to ship something faster than a year, someone else is already doing it and is probably already so far down the funnel, you're going to miss the mark. Whatever you're creating now is probably irrelevant a year from now.
Without the context, I don't know if they're building hardware because hardware certainly slows things down, but if it's purely software.
Software.
My comment would be a little bit different. My comment would probably be there's two different buckets here. There's sort of like, if you're not embarrassed of your first version, you ship too late. At the same time, the bar for a baseline minimal, MVP kind of experience has gone up, right? Like the design level has gone up. You know, people have a certain level of expectation, and attention is so hard to reach that you get one chance, you lose that chance. You may not get another chance to re-engage for 18 to 24 months, right? Doesn't matter what kind of email drip campaign you have or reach out or whatever, right? So you have this one shot. And so I do understand the premise around waiting before you like go all out and do a big announcement. But I think the big difference between how products are launched today versus maybe how they were launched 5-10 years ago, or let's say 10 years ago, is people aren't doing big launches as much anymore. They're kind of slow rolling it, building it public. I'm not advocating that you build everything in public, by the way. I think that has some trade-offs too, but they're sort of like, hey, I've got a beta of something out there, guys. Do you want to test this out, right? And then they kind of like slowly iterate on it. And then maybe at some point when things seem like they're working or it's at a good inflection point, they go out and say, hey, let's do like a bigger kind of announcement. Like I'm going to go launch it on Product Hunt, or I'm going to go try to get it picked up by TechCrunch or something like that.
Going back to, kind of your original hot take that we're going to have more AI friends than anything else, or more interactions maybe with AI than people than we in the future. What do you think is, and this is kind of a three-part question, what do you think is the implication for our organizations? What is the implication for the individual contributors, the people who currently are employees of those organizations? And what is the implication for the customers who are served by those organizations?
So let's start with the organization. So I think companies now, Gen AI, without a doubt, has been the biggest productivity boost, in my opinion, since the internet, or let's call it mobile and the internet. And then before that, probably the industrial revolution. Like we haven't, like, this is Neuralink. Like, people are talking about Neuralink as cybernetics, but like, people didn't think of Neuralink as something you have in your pocket. Like, we have it. We just, and we don't have to embed anything in our body, which is quite amazing. So from a individual company sort of perspective, I don't care what role you're in, there is some productivity boost happening. You're getting some more work done. Like whether it's more knowledge, whether it's being able to ask better and smarter questions in meetings, which gets to answers faster or more quickly, whether it's just simply output, right? Or whether it's even automation, where you can A/B test things faster, whatever it might be, right? So this is happening across the board. The hyperbolic stance within the tech community, and tech community loves to take these hyperbolic stances, is AI will replace everything. I'm actually on the other camp of that. So let's separating the fact that we might have more AI friends, I'm not in the camp that AI is replacing humans at the workplace. I actually think what's going to happen is these companies are going to be like, we can do more, right? We make more money. Now we have to hire more. We have to build more. We have to go even faster, right? The aspirations have changed. They're not trying to become $100 billion companies now. They want to be trillion. They want to be $10 trillion companies. And this is going to be really fascinating to watch, because what this means is every company is now competing at edges that they may not have competed at before, right? We already know Google's got some initiative that probably competes with half of the Fortune 500. But at this point, you're going to now see Google competing with Salesforce on a CRM product. And you're going to see Salesforce launch a search product. And you're going to see, you know, Microsoft, you know, build a home lumber equipment. I mean, who knows, right? Like, you're going to see gray areas and boundaries that we've never touched before, because they all are moving faster. And to support all that, they're not going to slow down hiring. They're going to hire 10 times as more people, right? So I think, you know, at a macro level, I think one, individuals obviously have to level up. I called this, actually, I gave a whole talk about this on Reforge, in Maven, and then later on Reforge, called Super IC, so the Super Individual Contributor. And this is very much about how can you use Gen AI to replace your low leverage work so you can focus on high leverage thing. Two, I think the organizations recognize this and they're looking at how they can Gen AI upskill their teams, but also management and leadership, you know, they have to become super ICs themselves, right? The whole role has shifted. Everyone's sort of becoming hands-on. And again, I'm speaking from it from a tech perspective, where we tend to be a little bit more early adopter. But like other industries, they're obviously slower to move and slower to adopt. And so it's something to think about. And frankly, a lot of people in various roles have a certain workflow they've been doing for two decades, and they don't want to change that workflow. And it's really uncomfortable to change that workflow. And I do worry if they don't change the workflow, they will be replaced, because years of experience is no longer the best metaphor or metric to determine who's the right person for something, right? They're looking at archetypes, high agency, high taste, product sensibility, things like that, right? So I think companies are going to be adapting, becoming sort of more super org. I call it the super org. So super ICs and super org. And then companies are now going to be chasing trillion-dollar opportunities, like massive expansion. We're going to go into space. We're going to colonize Mars and build a business there. We're going to go into mining. I mean, who knows, right? And then with all of that, of course, there's going to be AI interjected across all sorts of workflows to create automation. We're already seeing this. If you just look at sales, which is probably one of the most tech-forward groups within organizations, because they're always looking at optimization. They're bringing in Gen AI into email outreach. They're bringing it to LinkedIn DM, Twitter outreach, social media, content creation, you know, lead qualification, scoring, all these sorts of different functions. It's phenomenal. Even coaching of the individual SDRs, right? So in many ways, we are becoming conductors, right? And we basically are reviewing work, editing work, telling AI where to execute, and less so necessarily doing the work. But we know how to do the work, because we have to have enough taste and judgment to recognize when something looks correct or it's veering off course.
There are a lot of things that I wrote down. I'm like over here furiously taking notes as you are talking. I love the idea that companies, that the aspirations have changed. And I think it's really important to say those things out loud, because you, as someone who kind of was on the tech startup scene, you look at like the unicorn companies. And is a unicorn really that exciting anymore if they're chasing $1 trillion outcomes instead of, you know, $1 billion outcome? So that shift and that mindset of what good looks like because of this has to change. And we have to understand and acknowledge that change, because otherwise we aren't going to be able to exist in the world in which that is now what good and success looks like. But I love the idea of being a super IC. And I want to double click on your comment about your experience isn't what it used to be, right? Like, the fact that I don't have 25 years in a specific role doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not the right fit for a specific job or outcome now, because of the advent of AI?
Yeah, so I call it democratizing fractional expertise, right? So, you know, and I think the best way to sort of think about this is just examples, like in your day-to-day workflow. So I often ask people, I say, hey, you're struggling to figure out how to better leverage Gen AI in your workflow. Why don't you try documenting everything you're doing on a 10-minute basis, 10-minute by 10-minute throughout your day, and then ask the question, like, how could I have used AI to help accelerate that? But on top of that, take that document, send it to AI, and ask AI how it could have helped you accelerate each of those workflows. We're seeing, for example, I'm going to play the hat of a product manager, right, which is a very cross-functional role as it is, but we're seeing PMs now build prototypes, right, to better, you know, if you think about the product requirements document or designs, these are really different ways to, these are basically communication mediums. And in the end, PRD is just a form of communication, right? But now I can communicate by building a prototype. I don't have to necessarily do the design or a document. I can actually just show you what the experience might look like. We're seeing PMs do their own analytics, right? They may have had a data sciences team before and complicated SQL they had to write and whatnot. And now they can sort of go to AI and help it draft whatever they need to run to sort of figure that out. We're seeing AI take passes at understanding. PMs use it to understand accessibility issues in design or market research or understanding competitive dynamics or kind of going really deep as a thought leader to discuss pricing strategy and go to market, right? So you're seeing so many different surfaces where it's assisting and helping because it is truly a PhD in your pocket with all the sort of domain expertise. And I think really the question is like, how can we use it more? Like, you know, like it's like, you know, it's replacing everything from that perspective. But what it's allowing us to do is to go faster. It's not replacing human judgment, right? It's giving us another perspective. Just like you have a jury, you have human jurors, but you'll have an AI juror too, right? And we should consider that because that would have a different perspective, right? Just like you have an interview panel, there was some interesting data that came out that said interviewees sometimes preferring AI for the first screen because the first screen is often the most subjective where the recruiter kind of decides whether to move you into the interview loop or not, right? But AI could be a little bit more objective because it's not purely looking at a resume. It might be looking at inflection and knowledge or other things that it might know about you, whatnot, right? So really, really fascinating looking at how these dynamics are playing out.
So if someone is listening to this and they're an individual contributor or an employee, you know, so they work for someone and they're saying to themselves, I need to figure out how to become this super IC that he's talking about. How do they start? What is like the first thing they should do to start on this journey to becoming that super IC?
I think one, you know, I do talk about this in my Maven talk, so they're welcome to go take a look there. But one, I think they should try to document out their day. Look at like, you know, in 10 minute block, how are they spending their time? And then actually go and ask AI, like, how can you assist me in each of these steps? Two, I think they should take their functional role, whether a designer, whether you work in marketing, whether you work in legal, whatever, whatnot, and go find 5 or 10 peers within your group that are in those similar functions, that maybe some of them are using AI, and share use cases. And the reason this is important is a lot of learning here is seeing how your peers are using AI to help automate their workflow, right? We see legal, for example, might use it on a contract to look at blind spots or things that they may have missed or things that they didn't consider or different countries or whatever, whatnot, right? That they're not as familiar with a legal case study or whatever. In that process of showing each other how you're doing things, ideally, you actually do it with them. And that's a little bit different from normal sort of share and tell. I call it try and tell. And the reason is so much of getting better with Gen AI is the tribal learning that comes through the pain of like trying to ask questions and then like trying to rephrase your question and trying to see like why it didn't do what I wanted it to do. And so you have to go through that pain. Like just watching it isn't good enough. You actually have to go through some of that pain. So I think just those simple two steps would be a massive step function if you're starting from scratch. And I think the most common question I get is like, what should I start with? I'm like, hey, any tool at this point is at 98% of what you need, right? Like how many people actually need state of the art? Most people don't, right? ChatGPT, Gemini, I don't care. Copilot for Microsoft, they're all good enough now, right? We're way past, GPT-3 or whatever it was 2.5 years ago. Like we're in a different era now. Like everything is good. So take anything and just start with it. And then that's it. You know, you don't need to go play with the 40 other tools that are coming out on YouTube and, Twitter and TikTok every day. You know, that's just all noise. Like just stick with one thing and that's a great place to start. And then as you make progress, then you can start exploring other things. But right now we're just trying to get that initial unlock.
What about the flip side? I'm an organization leader. I'm a CEO. I'm an owner. And I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm saying, oh, crap, I might have missed the mark here. We are not thinking aspirationally enough. We need to start thinking this way. We want to become a super org. What would I do in that situation?
So a lot of leaders are going through this right now. And of course, they're setting up Slack groups where people can share. They're setting up try and tell days. They're they're pushing for automation. They're basically even creating guardrails, like, hey, you can't even hire a new person on your team unless you can justify that we can't do this with AI. So they're creating all sorts of ways to sort of push it. A lot of the friction that's coming in bigger enterprise or like workplaces hasn't been so much necessarily. Of course, you have some employee base that's like high anxiety or just, pushing back, doesn't want to necessarily try this. And we're way past the AI denialism phase. That was kind of like 2.5 years ago where it's like, oh, it's not really improving productivity. We're way past that. A lot of the friction actually comes to what the expense process is. Like, how do I buy the tools? How do I pay for them? And the security implications. And there's a lot of strategies around how to approach that. So one of the best approaches I've seen is actually allocating a budget. So each employee gets a certain budget that they can spend on AI tools. Ideally, you can even get sort of unlimited budget and then just be really good about canceling things, because there is a lot of AI tourism. And a lot of the learning here is about playing with a lot of different tools and playing with the latest tools, because new stuff comes out all the time, right? Another strategy is, of course, making sure you have delegated like evangelists within your organization. So you have people that are really sort of Gen AI first, Gen AI forward, make them available. Just like, I almost call it like vibe operations. They're available to answer questions, help you get started with prompt templates, whatever it is, anything that might come up, they can assist independent of role, right? The security question's a little bit harder. Many of the most popular AI tools do have enterprise versions that won't train on your data. Another approach is you can actually house everything in-house. You can get like a set of models that you can actually host in-house, run your own inference servers or whatnot, or basically against your own cloud. So these are just different strategies, but there's like, I actually give a whole talk on this called the Super Org Roadmap on Reforge. This is the one on Reforge, and Maven was the Super IC Roadmap that you can kind of dig in, but I kind of go into detail with like 20, 30 different strategies to sort of help leaders figure out how to navigate this.
Thinking about all of the incredible people that you know or that you aspire to know, who is helping us rethink the way we build relationships? Who's doing it better than anyone else?
You know, I haven't given a lot of thought to rethinking relationships. I was thinking about somebody I know who I think has done a great job just building relationships. Let's call it the relationship 1.0 way. So he doesn't even know I'm going to mention his name, but somebody I know named Nihal Mehta, who's a general partner over at ENIAC Ventures. I think he's just one of the best relationship builders I know. And I would say the key thing about building relationships is keep it authentic. Remember, wishing people happy birthday and paying it forward, right? So I think I try to do this too. Like, people ask for intros all the time. I respond. I give them intros. Now, at a certain point, I think in 2011, 12, I just couldn't handle all the inbound, particularly from like overseas services. So I stopped responding to everything. But like in general, especially when it's entrepreneurs, I try to help them out. So I pay it forward, make intros, give them a little bit of time if I can, or at least asynchronously. I think there's a lot of things you can do around just simply human in-person networking. So if you're traveling into a city, creating mailing lists, he's so good at this, built mailing lists for every city. Anytime he's in a city, always hosting little happy hours every time he's in the city, right? So he's just constantly rekindling his network, driving a lot of introductions. I think there's just a lot. I mean, it's probably a whole topic in itself, but in a sort of relationship 1.0 era way, I think it's amazing. In a relationship 2.0 era way, I need to think about it more, because that's really about how we're using AI to sort of drive relationships. I do feel in a 2.0 era, you're looking at more transactional versus deep. So it's more shallow and broad versus deep. There's something to be said. You need a mix of both. You need the reach, and you need to have, authentic relationships too.
I love that. And I love your description too. Longtime listener of the podcast will know pay it forward is a core value that I personally have and share with everyone. So it's always exciting to hear people say, it's about authenticity and really connecting as people. And I agree with you, like that 1.0 approach to relationships. We got to figure out how we can use that 2.0 approach to maintain the greatness of the 1.0 without sacrificing the authenticity and the human to human piece, without making it a very hard, difficult thing to do, especially for someone who doesn't come by it naturally.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's actually it could be very unnatural, and it can be very exasperating, and it can be tiring, you know, like simply even going to an event, talking to people can wear you down, right? Because especially in this post-COVID universe where so many people have been working from home for so long, just simply stepping out of your house is a moment where you have to be presentable, right? Yeah. You have to, you know, and so I understand.
And if someone is hearing this and they're really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to follow along, they want to check out some of your other talks, where can they find you online?
So I'm on LinkedIn at Rajan Singh, Twitter at Mobile Raj. I have my link tree at Mobile Raj. If you want to see some of my product portfolio, most of my career has been my own startups and acquisition. And I have to shout out a product I'm working on at Mozilla, which is called Solo. It's an AI website builder at soloist.ai.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me on The Growth Signal. This was not only a fascinating conversation, but I think one that people need to start having.
Thank you, Alyssa. Great time.